Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
One of the principles is called Who First, and this is where the business adage that probably a lot of people have heard before goes something like this. What the great companies do is they get the right people on the bus, the wrong people off the bus, and then for the people who are on the bus, get them in the right seats. Well, what does that really mean? So with the behavior-based personality assessment tool that I use, it gives me great insights into how a person is wired. So you remember in the early days of the Mac versus the PC, we had this clear sense the Mac was wired in a certain way, that it set it up for being really effective in sort of educational, creative, artistic environments. PC was better in business analytical situations. The reason for those distinctions is that operating in the background outside of your awareness as the end user, they're built on very different underlying operating systems. The Mac's built on Linux, the PC's built on DOS, and those operating systems perform certain functions better, more effectively than the other one and vice versa. That's why they can sort of perform better in those contexts. It's a great analogy for us as human beings, because what each one of us have operating in the background outside of our conscious awareness is what's called the behavioral operating system. So that operating system sets us up for having a natural preference and tendency to do some behaviors and not others. So when I profile candidates I'm working with, I can tell, are they wired like a Mac, more like a PC, or somewhere in between? And the idea is, if you think of all the different jobs in a company and all the different seats on the bus, and you assign one seat on the bus to one job in the company, if I can understand what the behaviors are that are required for success in that job, like for instance, VP sales, very different than CFO, then in going through my assessment process, I can tell, are the candidates I'm looking at wired for this particular seat on the bus? So it really helps me with what I call job fit. There are kind of two keys to success with executive search: job fit and culture fit. Job fit is, do you have the skills, experience, the right sort of historical accomplishments to do this job? That's the seat on the bus. And then the culture fit is about chemistry with the hiring manager, the people they're going to be working with closely, the values of the organization, the pace of work, all those kinds of things. The Drake P3 personality assessment tool also gives me great insights into how a person is wired from a personality perspective to get a better sense of culture fit. Can we work with you? Can you work with us? The Drake P3 also incorporates the emotional intelligence. And what research has found is that if you look at all the assessment tools that exist out there, Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, DISC, all the tools that companies are using, emotional intelligence is in a category all by itself, in that it stands kind of head and shoulders above all the others in its ability to identify who is likely to be a top performer. And what they found is that 90% of top performers in business score with really high emotional intelligence, but more importantly, 80% of low performers score with really low emotional intelligence. So by using emotional intelligence in my candidate assessment process, it acts almost like a safety net or an insurance policy. I only put in front of my clients those who score high on emotional intelligence, because it's such a clear de-risker of the possibility that I'm going to inadvertently put in place a low performer and not catch it.
Wow, this is quite an extraordinary universe. You know, you categorize so beautifully so that there's a maximum probability of alignment, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny because and then one of these speeches I just gave at a conference last month, I found some research online. They looked at different levels of hiring in an organization. So different from frontline entry level people to first level managers, second level, mid-level, presidents and CEOs. And then they asked the question, what is the failure rate of new hires over the first 18 months? Across the board, it bounces around depending on what category, but in general, 46% failure rate. I mean, when I looked at it, I realized, you know, that's basically like going to Las Vegas, you know, roll the dice, crap shoot, cross your fingers, hope for the best. And I have this saying that duct tape is not a strategy and hope is not a plan. And the way a lot of people approach recruiting is like, you just cross your fingers and hope for the best. And so, yeah, sometimes it works out, but half the time it doesn't. So I do this because it really dramatically de-risks that 50-50, you know, disconnect probability.
And your background in finance is one of the tools in you.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, it's actually a combination of the engineering that I started with, which taught me systems thinking.
Right.
Everything's interconnected. Mm-hmm. And so I get a sense of how all the moving parts in business work. So when I do meet with a new client, because of my finance and strategy background also, I'm usually engaging and asking questions that are more holistic. They're more about how the business operates and what the key drivers and risks are in the business, so that when I'm searching and sort of vetting candidates, I have a better sense of what that context and that environment is. My experience of most recruiters is that they come from an HR or an organizational development background, which is a piece of business, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they've seen the whole entire picture. And so I think that's also helped me as a recruiter.
Are there particular attributes to the wine recruiting that's different from any other type?
Any other industry?
Yep.
You know, there's a couple peculiarities. One is that, you know, wine is not rocket science, but it is very complicated, particularly because of the archaic, you know, sort of three-tier distribution system and all of the constraints that are imposed upon, particularly, you know, sales folks and marketers. There's just a lot of restrictions that, you know, are imposed upon you in terms of what you can sell and how you can market, and you can't bundle your products with certain other products, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's different on a state by state, in some cases, county by county basis. So I'm one of those recruiters who loves bringing in talent from outside the industry. Unfortunately, a lot of the decision makers are still in this mindset of, we don't have the luxury of time to bring in somebody from outside the industry and let them get down the learning curve to discover the subtleties and nuances of the wine business. We need them to be able to hit the ground running on day one. I always sort of check that out with my clients to find out how open are they, because my experience is that if you have a really smart, really accomplished, really resourceful, somebody who really gets along well in the sandbox, they're goal-oriented, results-oriented, they're articulate, and they've demonstrated success in another industry, they can get down the learning curve here fairly quickly. It's not going to take them forever to learn this business and get down that learning curve. It's more that the objection is on the hiring side. And so I've had success. Like, I just placed a chief marketing officer from the hospitality industry. She had been with a couple of luxury hotels and restaurants, and she's now with Crimson Wine Group. And, you know, she's taken to it really, really nicely. I placed a couple of leaders from luxury hotels here in Napa Valley into DTC director and leadership roles, you know, and they've had to learn the basics of how the DTC business functions. But the fact that they're trained in hospitality and they know how to run large teams of people that are hospitality and sales oriented, they've made the jump over, you know, to industry quite easily. So, you know, there really isn't all that much that's unique about wine, except that, you know, it is wine. Like, if you ask somebody from wine, would you want to go and work in Silicon Valley? You'd have a learning curve to get up to speed on all the technology. It's the same in the other direction. The other area that's kind of unique is finance area. A lot of the finance talent has been attracted to San Francisco and Silicon Valley. So it's very difficult to find really high caliber talent in finance. And finance is complicated because we've got not just a product like toothpaste. We've got the vintage issues, which creates inventory accounting issues. And you've got also incredible capital intensity with the vineyards and the investment that's required to own and manage those vineyards. All of the investment capital that's required in the tanks and the equipment and the barrels and all that, it creates a lot more complexity from a balance sheet perspective. So you've got to have a CFO, VP, director of finance who really gets inventory, cost accounting, who really gets, you know, sort of the balance sheet side of the business as well, and really understands cash flow well.
How long is an average search for you?
It depends. I'd say in general, 2 to 3 months is the average. Mm-hmm. The fastest I've ever closed a search, from the day I signed a contract with a client to the day the candidate signed the offer letter, was 18 days. And that's where just everything just fell right into place. They can get extended if there's something that's really unique about the role and they need nothing but a unicorn candidate. Those can stretch it out. If the client is really difficult to work with, And that's hard to discover until you get into it with them. And I've actually had a couple of situations where we had to mutually fire one another because they didn't value my process, then the rigor and the sophistication, and they, you know, wanted to do their own thing and didn't get why I do what I do. And so sometimes they can get in the way, drag things out. If you've got vacations that interrupt, either on the candidate side or the client side, that can stretch it out. Yeah. You know, but or the client changes the, you know, the criteria for who the ideal candidate is, because sometimes they don't really know what they're looking for, so you got to get started, and then the first wave of candidates comes through and it helps them narrow their understanding of who they're really looking for, and sometimes we have to change the criteria and update the performance success profile, so that can extend it out, but typically no more than 3 or 4 months on the long side. Every once in a while maybe 5 or 6 months, but not very often.
What's your favorite part of your job?
So there's another personality assessment tool called the Enneagram. And the Enneagram breaks people down into 9 different categories. I'm what's called the 2 on the Enneagram. They call it the helper. What brings me the most joy is I love interacting with people and being that trusted advisor to clients and the trusted career counselor to the you know, candidates, the employee side. I love getting to know people, understanding what makes them tick. I love, you know, understanding what turns them on, what their terrible experiences in, you know, in their careers have been, and then being that sort of puzzle maker, the matchmaker who can see, okay, here's the picture of the jigsaw puzzle. I know what I'm shooting for. Here's all the pieces out on the table. How do I put them together in a way as fast as I can and as accurately as I can to kind of deliver what I've committed to? And that requires a lot of human interaction, and I love the human interaction piece. That's what really makes me tick.
Wow. Well, clearly you're an empath and very high in EQ scale, because what you describe is very complex, but if you were to distill it, it sounds like it's about understanding those undercurrents and relational aspects and creating a system that addresses as much of it as possible. So it's a very thoughtful approach. So for small business owner, which as we know, the Valley, is obviously populated quite heavily now with the corporate entities and small businesses who are not able to utilize your services and have to be their own CEO and CFO and all the other functions. What would you recommend? What would be your advice to small business that's, you know, trying to make their way in the universe, as they say in Star Wars, in a very challenging environment?
I probably have 10 answers to that.
Good. I want all of them.
So if we just focus on the challenge of hiring top caliber talent, and this is something I end every one of my presentations with in front of groups of people, even though it might sound like I'm shooting myself in the foot because I'm literally telling people, go out and learn to do what I do. I literally tell people, go out and get somebody in your organization, whether it's you or your CEO or your head of HR or somebody who is involved in the interviewing process, go have them get certified in performance-based hiring. The Adler Group has made it so easy for hiring managers, outside independent executive recruiters like myself, and also internal HR people to get certified in performance-based hiring. They do it online. It's over the course of 4 weeks, 2 hours every Friday morning. It's live with Lou Adler, the creator of the product, and one of his top, you know, sort of trainers. And it's absolutely amazing. It will change the way that people think about the game of hiring and onboarding and retention. It will change the way that they contact prospective candidates, the way they interact with prospective candidates, the way they interview, the way they make their decisions. It literally turns the entire recruiting and hiring process on its ear. It's like throwing out the entire old model and starting from scratch with the assumption that you're only going to figure out how to identify and attract and engage top performers. It's a wonderful process and approach. And one of my missions, my personal missions, is I want to see recruiting and hiring elevated in the wine industry. So I actually know that one of my roles in the wine industry is to incubate and what's another word for it? Anyway, incubate more recruiters who have got a higher level of skill. So I've got a guy on my team right now, Christopher Pappy, who literally approached me 2 years ago and said, hey, I want to make a transition from a W-2 job. He was starting an outsourced national sales and marketing company as a consultant. And he wanted to be sure that he could also sort of supplement his income in case that ebbed and flowed too much. And mm-hmm. he loved the process that he'd heard and things he'd heard about the Newland Associates process. And so he asked if I'd take him through the Drake P3 profile so he could understand his own personality and how that might set him up for success or failure as a consultant. So we probably met every 2 or 3 weeks over coffee, and I'd walk him through that, help him think things through, and he'd use me as a sounding board as he'd bump up against a challenge with a client or whatnot or a situation. And one day out of the blue, he said, "Hey, you know, have you ever thought about bringing on any other recruiters? Because I love what you do, and I think I might be good. I've got a great network." And the truth is, I've tried that 2 or 3 times in the past, much farther along in my past. I'm not at the place I am in my evolution that, you know, then that I am now. And so I was not successful at it. I just couldn't find people who had the same level of commitment to excellence and communication and attention to detail and follow up and follow through that I did. And so it never worked. Well, Christopher came on board, and he's got a very different approach and style than I do, but we complement each other in some really unique and cool ways. And so he's been working with me for, gosh, I want to say a year and a half part-time basis, but it's working so phenomenally well. And so the awareness has happened for me. It's like, okay, I know I'm supposed to help other recruiters who want to raise their game, and I'm willing to bring them on in some type of a creative coaching fashion. As you know, hiring is difficult, and the wine industry is ridiculously difficult. We don't have enough housing here in Napa Valley to support the quantity of talent that we need to, not just for the wineries, but if you take all the hospitality venues, you know, the hotels and the restaurants mm-hmm. as well, we have a huge shortage of talent here in Napa Valley, and we just don't have enough housing to support that.
There's such a concentration in this valley of value, of glamour, of all sorts of factors.
Yeah.
And yet the support, the infrastructure seems to be lacking severely. Is that your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. I would agree with that.
How can we address this? I mean, obviously we're focusing on Napa, and I should ask you whether this is your primary area where you work, or is it other wine countries or Napa?
No, I work just in wine.
Okay.
And when I moved back here, when I moved here to Napa 3.5 years ago, I think one of the unspoken reasons why that little voice inside of my head guided me to come here. Mm-hmm. When I was in Park City, I told you I finished 6 months of my sabbatical in Park City. At the end of that 6 months, the little voice popped back in my head when I was meditating and said, "Dude, you're not done with California. You're not done with recruiting. You're not done with wine. But you're going to move to Napa Valley and plant your flag right there." And the reason was, when I was recruiting in wine from Marin, it was very difficult to penetrate the Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. Part of it is it's a fairly provincial valley. And even though Marin is only an hour away, I just wasn't here enough. My face wasn't present enough. People just didn't think about me as often. And so once I moved here, because I had a good reputation and people knew who I was and word got out that I was now in Napa, it's literally like the hinges flew off the doors. And all of a sudden, I just had all kinds of work starting to show up all up and down the valley. And in the last 3.5 years, I've only done 2 searches outside of Napa Valley, one over in Sonoma and one down in Paso Robles. And I'm content doing this because my recruiting career in wine prior to that was across all 3 time zones. And I was working mostly with major importers. I spent a good 5 years rebuilding the entire senior leadership, the sales leadership team for Deutsch Family Wine and Spirits, and then for Terlato Wines International before that for a few years. So done a lot of work in 3 time zones. I'm really content to work in 1 time zone here.
So Napa Valley, what is it, 1,200 wineries now?
No, not that many. It's it's like 540 is the latest number that I've heard in Napa Valley.
In Napa Valley proper, yeah. Okay.
But across the U.S., we just crested 10,000 licensed bonded wineries and virtual wineries. 10 years ago, the number was about 6,000. If you run the numbers, that's a 65% increase in 10 years. That's huge.
Yes,
that's
insane.
Partly also why we have such a talent shortage.
Yep.
We have a lot more wine companies chasing after a smaller base of talent. The other reason we have a smaller base of talent at the executive level where I work is, if you think about it, the boomer generation, big swell in the population. A lot of boomers are approaching retirement. The millennials is the next big swell of population. They're not far enough along in their careers to really step into these senior executive roles, or at least They think they are, but they're not really. The, you know, the X generation in the middle is a much smaller population. Those are the people who are like, you know, 30s and 40s. They are ready for those executive level roles, but there just aren't enough of them. Like 5 years ago, I could easily present 6, 7, 8 finalist candidates. Today, I'm lucky if I can get 2, 3, 4 in the mix, just because, you know, we're at historically low. I heard San Francisco and Los Angeles metropolitan areas are at 2.4% unemployment now. It, last year it was at 4. We're now all the way down to 2.4% unemployment. That's just...
It's a crazy dynamic.
Yeah.
And the irony is that arguably the Valley needs it the most these days, because in my observation, they're really, considering the growth and the influx of business and the challenges that are entirely new in terms of how the product is marketed.
Yeah.
How do you bridge that? I mean, what steps can we actively take in this community?
You know, I was on a panel with, I'm blanking on his name, so I apologize for that, but the mayor of Calistoga, it's about 2 months ago, and this question was asked, how do we address the talent shortage issue? And I loved his response, and it sort of like silenced me, and it silenced the entire crowd, and I didn't have anything else to add to it. He said, it comes down to three solutions: housing, housing, housing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I think he's actually onto something here. So what do we do about that? I mean, we definitely have a couple of major apartment complexes that are under construction here in Napa. And there's one down on Soskal, south of Napa. And I think there are some others that are planned. But boy, I'm not, honestly, I don't know. I don't have a creative solution. I think for the wineries that have an existing employee base, there are a lot of things that they need to do on the retention front to make sure that the employees they do have, especially their top performers, aren't just jumping ship and jumping ship and jumping ship because they got courted because of a little bit more money. There are some companies that are doing some really cool things to make sure that they are taking care of their existing employee base. Cake Bread Cellars and the Good Life Wine Company, which owns Jessup Cellars and Handwritten up in Yountville, come to mind. Tracy McArdle spoke on a panel about what they're doing there on the retention front with me. And then Nicole Cummings, who's the head of HR for Cake Bread, also spoke on a different panel with me. And they're doing some really cool stuff to make sure their people feel like they're part of the family, their input and involvement is valued, that they get the chance to really help to guide the evolution of their career. You know, it's those kinds of really thoughtful things that I think companies have to do to build a stronger sense of connection and relationship with their employees, so that it's not just about coming to work and doing a job and getting a paycheck. You got to make it feel like they're spending, what, 2/3 of their life or half of their life at the job. If you're not making that meaningful and valuable to them, then you're missing the boat and there's no reason for them to stay. And then, of course, they're going to jump around.
That is such an extraordinary comment, like in terms of just pausing on something that I think we all should be mindful of: how much time you spend at work.
Yeah.
What is the quality of your life?
Yeah.
While you're there.
Yeah.
I think if we all start thinking that way, we will seek answers to facilitate that level of quality of time, and then it will show in the work.
Yep.
And then it will basically come full circle, because the output would be so much better.
Yep, absolutely. There was a article that came out, I think it was in the last year. Google did an internal research project to understand their employee base, you know, sort of like employee satisfaction. And one of the surprise conclusions that came out of that is that people don't quit a job, they quit a boss. And I kind of went, whoa. And that fit right in with some research that I saw at a conference that I attended about 2 years ago called LeaderCast.
The conclusion of this interview can be found in the next podcast, already available for your download. Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palette Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson.